Thank you. Today I'm going to be talking about The Stress Will Kill You, Prisoner Reentry as Experienced by Family Members, and the Urgent Need for Support Services. And I have no relationships to disclose. So as many of you are probably aware, the rate of incarceration in our country is a very... I don't even know what word to use. It's a major problem. You can see this spike in the 1980s due to different political actions that really impacted the rate of incarceration. And this incarceration largely impacts African-American communities. African-American men in particular are 7 times as likely to be incarcerated than their non-Hispanic white peers. And one of the things that we have found from this mass incarceration is that these arrests have not been randomly distributed. They can be predicted where these hot spots are going to be based on various factors, even when you control for the actual crime, the crime rate. And so things like poverty, for example, you can identify where these hot spots of incarceration are going to be. And so there's been a lot of research around this. And most of this has really been looking at individual health of prisoners and of people coming back into community after they are released. A lot on community health in terms of how this system and how this revolving door of people coming in and out of the community can affect community health, as well as public health more generally. But what we see is that there's very little support or attention that has been given to the family members who are also part of this process when someone comes back into the community. We know, though, from studies, when people coming out of the prisons are surveyed, that they rely very, very heavily on their family members for support. And the support is very broad, right? It could be advice, it can be transportation, money, housing, childcare, all sorts of things that the family members take on to help this individual out as they're reintegrating back into their community. But we don't really know much about that perspective from the family member side, with the exception of a couple of very small surveys that have indicated that these family members feel a high deal of anxiety. And so this project that I'm going to talk about today was based on an ongoing partnership with Group Ministries in Baltimore. And Group Ministries has been a partner with the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine and Public Health for over 10 years. And various capacities, and they are a nonprofit organization that provides housing and job training services for people coming back into the Greater Rosemont neighborhood of Baltimore. And the Greater Rosemont neighborhood of Baltimore is one of those hot spots in Baltimore. It is one of the highest areas, has one of the highest rates of incarceration, and also that's one of the highest places when people are leaving the prisons say they're going to go. They have a very large issue with this revolving door of people coming in and out and then needing extra services for that. And so the way that they provide services is to provide both housing and job training. And so with the housing, they provide the actual structure of housing and then also services, so mental health services. They have counselors that they work with. And then also they do job training services, not only for the men in the house, but for anyone in the community can apply to do it. And these are in construction, plumbing, and electricity. And that is for both men and women, although it is primarily men. And then throughout this effort, the partnership was expanded as well to bring in people as we kind of understood what we were needing. We reached out for additional partners. And so exploring the family members' needs and experiences really came out of a desire for Group Ministries and other organizations that I talk with as part of a broader criminal justice network coalition that we're part of, was that Group Ministries was really trying to reach out more to the families and didn't really know how to do this. And so as part of their training program, once a month, everyone would be invited, and so before the class on a Wednesday night, they would have family unity night. And the men and women in the program invited their family members to come. We had, you know, a buffet of food, and we all sat together. And it was a really fantastic experience. And it also allowed the family members to see where their, you know, family member was going, what they were doing. And then while they were going on into their class instruction, because this was a night that they were in a classroom and not out in the field doing work necessarily, the family members could have access to a counselor as well, sit and talk about their experiences, what was going on in their lives, ask questions. And that was something that was very positive for both the family members and the men and women in the program. We got a lot of really positive results about that. And so there was really this identified need of how can we take this farther. And so to kind of explore, because we really didn't know exactly what was needed and what was desired, we conducted focus groups in 2012. And essentially because we wanted to leave it open, we said, you know, you have to be 18 years or older and have a family member in reentry. And we also did put in there provide support, but we did not in any way define support because we didn't want to put any limits on that. And then the transcripts were analyzed through inductive thematic analysis. And we also didn't define what kind of partnership or what kind of family member it needed to be in reentry. And so when family members are considered, usually it's from the wife, so the financial drain of the wife, or on the children and the impact of children of having their mother or father in, you know, in and out of the system. And what we found are we had very little children or wives come. Well, that's not true. We had 30% partners, but those were both male and female. We had a lot of brothers and cousins as well, and then 10% sons. And so here are some of the themes that came out of that. And really the overarching theme was stress. And so this came down from the stress from the support provided. Stress from reestablishing that relationship. A lot of the individuals, you know, talked about the fact that when a person comes out and they've been in prison for a while, how much they change. They become institutionalized. And so that person is no longer the same person who went in. And a lot of times the hard thing was that the individuals didn't want to talk about their experiences inside. You know, a lot of very negative things happen inside in terms of violence, for example, and they don't want to talk about it. And so one of the gentlemen mentioned, you know, it feels like I'm missing part of his life, that all of a sudden he, you know, there's this big part of his life that I don't have access to, and it was really hard for that trust building. And this was true even if the other person had been in prison themselves at some point. Also a stress from lack of control. And so they acknowledged that they could do whatever they could for their family member, but it might not do anything because they don't actually have control. They understand that where they live, there is a lot of activity that can get people in trouble, a lot of situations where you walk by maybe a drug bag on the floor and a cop will say, well, I just saw you throw that out. And you can get arrested. And so they recognize that. They see a lot of injustice in that dynamics in their community. They also have, you know, they recognize there's no control over helping their family member get a job and motivating them. Those types of things. They really recognize that they can only do so much, and that was really hard for them to accept. And then finally, acute stress. They talked a lot about the fact that this was just an additional stressor on living in a very stressful environment. A lot of them themselves suffered through a lot of discrimination, and this was largely talked about in the context with the police-community relationships. And so, you know, they really talked about how this was just one additional thing that was almost like the straw that broke the camel's back. And when we talked about coping strategies for these, they were both healthy and harmful. So, you know, some talked about, you know, smoking marijuana, some spoke about drinking, some spoke about going out and getting drunk. But then there were also healthy ones, such as taking a walk, or a lot of the men, interestingly, who had been incarcerated themselves, talked a lot about meditating and how they learned in prison to meditate because that was their source. If you're surrounded by people, you're in a cell, that was a way for them to kind of have their own space and environment. And so they would learn to meditate. They also talked about the fact that there was no support. They didn't know. No one could name one single support program that was available to them in this role, but that they really wanted it, and they provided a wide range of the support that they wanted, such as a helpline that they could call, something with counseling, all sorts of different things that they thought would be very helpful. But the main issue that they all stress is they just wanted something. They wanted something. And so in thinking about this, we all got together and talked about what do we do with this. And so I do want to say, so the group that worked on this included not only leaders of the organization, but also housing members. And so it did include individuals who were part of the organization themselves, who had experienced, you know, they're relying on their family members. And one of the gentlemen, also, his brother had also recently came out, and because he had been out for about a year, he was really feeling that stress on top of his own of helping his brother. And so we decided to develop a support session, and we developed it guided by popular education and also included the mindful-based stress reduction techniques. And this, because this really helps someone be mindful of what they can and cannot control, helps you, you know, with meditation, with stretching, and really we thought would be a great way, because we know people can't control, you know, their situation, to provide some tools. But then the rest of the sessions were talked about communication, support, forgiveness of yourself and of them, because there was a lot of issues that came out. And so those were all very active, engaging sessions that were based on popular education. And so to pilot this program, we received a Be Me, or a Black Male Engagement Leadership Award, and one of the housing members was the one who applied for this. And so we have created a video, which was a great video, and I wish I would have put it up here, but you can Google it on YouTube. And it, you know, we show the community, and then he talks about helping his brother come back and his experiences, and the fact that this is something that no one looks at, no one cares about. And so we got the funding from Be Me, and we were able to pilot the session with two groups just recently. And you can see that there's quite a span of time between the focus groups and the pilot session, and part of this had to do with expanding our partnership and the dynamics of that, and building those additional networks. And as you all know, that takes a lot of time. And for this, again, we only limited to 18 years or older, having a family member in reentry and experiencing stress. But again, we did not define stress. And then at the end of the program, we wanted to make sure that we really recognized the participants, partly because this was their program, even popular education, right? Like, they are really the ones doing everything, and it's their tools, it's their knowledge. And so we had a certificate, because that's something we hear a lot in the community, is that, you know, we don't get anything. Everything we ever get is for being bad, you know, and no one ever gives us anything for being good. So we had a certificate of completion of, like, for the support group, and then everything we talked about we've put into a resource book. And so it's all the tools that they collectively came up together with the additional ones from the mindful-based stress reduction tools, and then they also ask, can you guys put in more? You know, can you put in additional tools maybe that we didn't come up with as well? And so we're currently working on that. And so the last session was a feedback session, and this was done essentially through a focus group type method with the two. And we had very positive feedback. And one of the really important things is that many just said they felt heard, and how appreciated they were that they could speak in an environment about these issues that they were dealing about without feeling guilty, because they didn't want to kind of betray their family member. So being in this environment where they could actually discuss that, you know what, this is actually really hard and it's having a negative effect on me, that was something that was very, very powerful to them. They really felt like somebody cared about them. And one of the really amazing things, I thought, was how fast the bonds formed between the groups, particularly the first group, and I'll speak to that in a second. And they did call each other family, and they, you know, exchanged numbers. They had plans to continue hanging out. And it was people who had never met each other before, for the most part. They really enjoyed the diversity of the group, which I thought was also very interesting, because they talked about how all the support groups that are out there are very, you know, exclusive. So you have to be an alcoholic. You have to be, you know, addicted to drugs. You have to be something, and that can be very stigmatizing. And they didn't feel like this was in any way, because it was open to a complete range of individuals. We had people from 18 to 65, and we had a complete mix of men and women. And then the other thing I thought that was really amazing to hear was how much happiness they talked that this brought into their lives. They, you know, were really sad if they missed a week, because then they had to wait a whole other week, because this was such a source of coming and stress relief and happiness, because it was a really fun dynamic. And they were doing it. You know, they were doing the role playing. They were doing the, you know, all the activities. And then many of them also talked about the fact that they had already started using the tools from the mindful-based stress reduction in their daily lives, and they wanted more practice. And a lot of them were very sad when, you know, when it was the last session, of course. So one of the, I think, unexpected things that happened during this program was that during the second session, so they weren't concurrent, during the second session, people began hearing stuff on the street in the community and started flocking, to the point where we actually had to a couple times turn people away, because we didn't have seating and we didn't have food, and we didn't have the capacity at that time, which was something that we really struggled with, of how do you do this. And so that was a really, because we hadn't meant for it to be an open session. We had meant for it to be, you know, people come in, they do all the sessions, and in that form that really tight bond with each other. And so that was something we really had to work with, of how do we now have people come who are new to the group, and, you know, and kind of deal with that we weren't expected to have. And so I think that really spoke to us about the importance of this, that people heard about on the streets and started coming. And we did let them in, by the way. We never, you know, with the exception of a few times when we just could not have capacity, we never turned anyone down. And so you can see here in the second group, there was a total of 21 unique participants over 7 weeks, but you see that the average number of sessions attending is fairly low. I mean, it's about half, but this is because it kept going, you know, kept growing, and so a lot of people only attended 3 at the end or so on, and so I think that was a really remarkable thing that happened. So some of the challenges from the research side is really quantifying support, and one of the things that I think is important to notice is that in the intake survey with the focus groups, only 60% of people said they felt stressed. Hold on. Sorry, I'm going actually down to the second one. okay, I was supposed to be quantifying, quantifying stress, not support. So on the focus group intake surveys, about 60% said that they felt stressed due to this role as a supporter. In the focus groups, everyone talked about it. It was a very distinct difference that survey measure just didn't capture. And so that's something really hard to think about. How do we quantify stress when we're looking at these issues? Another one is really trying to understand the toll of stress due to supporting a family member from the fact that many had been previously incarcerated themselves. Over half of the participants in the focus groups, for example, also had a history of incarceration themselves. And this had a very unique dynamic as well when it came to the support. And then finally, really identifying the specific health impacts due to that support and the stress that is versus, you know, global chronic stress that they experience. From the implementation side, sustainability, of course, for many programs is a very huge barrier. And for some of the reasons for this is that it's really hard to sell to funders that we need help for the family members. We are very focused on reentry. We are very focused on not wanting individuals to go back into prison. And a lot of programs for this go to the individuals themselves. And, you know, think of the second act funding. And so really getting funders to see that this is actually can be a really positive component of that process can be a very difficult thing to sell. And so we need a lot more, you know, research and demonstration that this is very much needed and is helpful. And then the other one is that from the organization side, that it can be difficult to for organizations to justify spending the limited resources they have on a program like this. And this is something we saw in looking to expand our partnership, is that one of the men at one of Baltimore's biggest programs for reentry is a very good friend of ours. I've worked with him a lot over the years, and he was extremely excited for us also to pilot this at his organization. And, you know, so I went, and there was a lot of you know, there was very political dynamics of us doing this. A lot of people in the organization did not want it to happen because they said, we don't have time, we don't have, you know, even though the money was there, they're like, we don't have the time, this is not a priority. And he ended up, for other reasons, losing his job, and immediately, you know, because there wasn't a champion for it, that didn't work out, and that partnership wasn't able to really seal and work together. And so, again, it's difficult for organizations sometimes to justify spending their money this way, again, without a lot of information to show that it's really important. So I want to just acknowledge the individuals who worked on this with me, who are not here, but these include members from the organization, as well as from the counseling center, and then one of the other facilitators was a retired community member who had a lot of work in family mediation in the community over his years. So, thank you.
Please, next is Dr. Dawn Richardson, please.